Are you bored of TV? Getting bored with the pandemic? Or still paying alimony? Why don't you go read How to See a Man About a Dog? Collected writings. It's surreal. It's strange. It's How to See a Man About a Dog. Get your dose of surreal prose and poetry with this dark comedy collection. Ebook available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. Print copies available on Amazon, Book Depository, and more. Please check the link in the show notes as well. The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
Look, as much as I love that we don't really see images of that film, I just want to see that film.
The terrible Australian Bea Jermaine.
If they made a romantic comedy out of The Fly, this would probably be it.
It contains coarse language.
After it was over and the credits were done, my friend just looked at me and he just said, "Dude, that was f***."
Mature themes.
Her husband wants her need satisfied, and she had a zombie baby with him.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
G'day everyone, this is Bea Jermaine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to episode 16 of Podcasters of Horror, the podcast where my co-host Super Marcy and I talk about horror anthology film and TV shows. But at the moment, we are particularly focusing on the unofficial third season of Masters of Horror, which is Fear Itself. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
Hello, hello. Not too bad, Bede. Thanks for the lovely introduction. Doing all right, doing all right. We're, it's the horror season now, so nothing else matters.
we're already at the start of, already probably by the time this episode is dropped, yes. It will be about a week into October, so the horror season is already in full swing, and we've already got some good podcasts coming up in terms of horror-related entertainment for this month. And we definitely have a pretty good episode of Podcasters tonight, because we're going to be talking about two very interesting episodes from two very interesting but awesome filmmakers. But Marcy, we are not alone on this one.
No, we are not. We have a special guest.
Indeed. This is her first time on any of her podcasts.
Yeah.
But we have been on her podcast. You and I both went on one episode together, and then you went on the solo episode as well, which I'm very upset by, because nobody asked me if I wanted to join.
you'll get to do your own,
episode.
I just got a pitch an idea. But tonight's episode, we are joined by the host of Thank God It's Friday, a horror podcast, and that, of course, is its Kat. Hello, Kat. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm so excited to talk about this. This is the first time I've seen this show, so now you guys have me hooked. Thanks.
you say that now, but then you like watch the two episodes, like, yeah, that's all I need to say at the moment. I don't need to see the rest of this series.
Well, I hope it's as good as what we saw, as what I have seen.
But there are a few, with the ones the first, four that we talked about previously, I think maybe except one, three of them are probably worth watching at least.
Yeah, definitely. And also we have also talked about the first, the two-season run of Masters of Horror itself. And, you know, that is always a great show for any fan of horror to check out, especially with the concept of it being that it's horror filmmakers tackling all these episodes. Which, of course, is the same for Fear Itself, although this one was made for more primetime television rather than cable television compared Masters. And we're pretty much at the halfway point, because we're going to be talking about episodes 5 and 6, which of course are Eater and New Year's Day. Now, before we get to talking about these episodes, Kat, since you're on Podcasters of Horror, were you familiar with the TV show Fear Itself and Masters of Horror, or is this a show that's pretty much just all brand new to you?
Fear itself is brand new, but I have watched some of Masters of Horror because I'm really picky. So I went in and watched all the ones with filmmakers that I really like. So I was like, I'm going to watch this one. I'm going to watch this one. So I think I only ended up watching maybe 3 or 4 episodes. But I have been meaning to circle back and finish watching them because they're on Stan now.
Oh, yes, they are. Well, in Australia, yeah. Stan. So if anyone who our Australian listeners want to see the show, that's where they can watch it. Or if you're in the US or Canada, it is on Tubi US and Canada. So they can check it out there.
Yes, I was illegally watching episodes in the past, but then I think that was only 1 or 2 episodes, and then I was like, oh, wait a second, it's on Stan.
Yes. <I'm kidding>.
Indeed, indeed. But we'll get right to our 2 episodes that we're talking about tonight. First up, of course, is the episode Eda.
Hey, Meller, you need anything? Do you want anything?
How about a plate of liver and some eyeball risotto?
Just get the hell out of me.
There you go. Service with a smile. Yeah. Is it good?
Thanks.
Special blend.
You seen Mattingly?
No, not since he came up here to watch The Prisoner, no.
Hey, should check him out. You guys out like a light.
So, you ever wonder why he does it?
Kill people?
And eat them. I mean, that's the thing, right? It's the eating people.
Which was directed by Stuart Gordon, who, of course, is the director behind films such as Reanimator and From Beyond, and also directed the Masters of Horror episodes, Dreams in the Witch House and The Black Cat.
Yeah.
This episode was written by Richard Schismar and my arch nemesis, Jonathan Scheck.
Yes.
I'll get into that reason why he is my arch nemesis in a second. And this episode was based on a short story by Peter Crawford. And this episode's plot summary is, which I'm reading off IMDb, nothing is what it seems when a rookie cop is assigned to watch over a serial killer known as Eda. And this episode stars Elizabeth Moss, who we all know from the TV show Mad Men and most recently in the hit horror film The Invisible Man. And, of course, the other TV show are The Handmaid's Tale as well. Mm-hmm. And this also stars Russell Hornsby, Stephen Lee, Stephen R. Hart, and Pablo Schreiber, the younger brother of Liev Schreiber.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get right to this episode. Now, Marcy, I know you're a huge Stuart Gordon fan.
Yes.
How does this episode, Eda, compare to, I guess, the 2 episodes he contributed to Masters of Horror, but also how does it work as a standalone as well?
Well, I'd say this one is on par with, what was the first one, Dreams in the Witch House?
Dreams of the Witch House.
Yeah, I think it's more on par with that. I think perhaps with the script, like, it's quite interesting itself, but I don't think there was quite enough there that it sort of felt like it was filling out a bit of the running time. So maybe if there was a little bit more in there, it could have been elevated more. But I think, you know, at least Stuart Gordon actually tackled this pretty well. It does feel like it's Stuart Gordon-y, and I liked that about it. In terms of, like, you know, just how it is this own little, you know, short film, like, I think it does work for the most part. It's an interesting, intriguing story. And, you know, thinking of it being fleshed out, like, this is one I think that you could kind of do as a feature. And I could see that as, like, a Stuart Gordon feature. Obviously, he's done better things, but he's done probably poorer things as well. But this sits on there, like, more sort of upper tier stuff, because I do think that there's a lot of merit to this episode.
Indeed. And Kat, what did you think of this episode, Eda?
I really enjoyed it. I thought that this whole concept of a, you know, magic man And I looked for the mythology behind this because I was like, is there anything I can find? And there was nothing. So I thought it was a really cool concept that he like conjured up this dark magician, basically. And I'm not really familiar with Stuart Gordon's work. I've only seen Reanimator and like some of the stuff he's written, like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So this is a really nice introduction into another filmmaker that I can definitely see myself enjoying more of their work.
Indeed. And I guess for me, I'm kind of a little mixed on it, but I do have some aspects of it that I did really enjoy. I think Elizabeth Moss,
yes,
who is great in the lead role as Danny Bannerman, who's like this rookie cop at this police station.
Yeah.
That's right away, we're kind of on her side because basically most of the male cops who are at this precinct are very much sexist towards her, even if at times a little too cartoonish in terms of
they're pretty disgusting.
Yeah,
the character of Steinwitz, who's I don't know what it is, played by Stephen Lee, and I don't know what it is about this character. I guess spoilers for this episode. Pretty much at a certain point, Ida pretty much uses like a black magic to kind of what he does is he eats the heart of any person, and once he does, he can become that person, like he can shapeshift. And so basically for a lot of it, you're like, it goes back and forth, like at times you're not sure, like, is that Ida or is this these characters just being complete other assholes towards Danny? And Steinwitz in particular is a very gross character because he's always sweating and he's always eating food, but I enjoyed pizza as much as the next person, but the scene where he's eating the pizza, that pizza looked utterly disgusting.
Yeah.
And revolting. And also, like, Pablo Schreiber, who plays Mattingly, he's just a complete arsehole, and he plays it really well. But that's the thing that I get. But I do think it's interesting because since this whole episode is set entirely at this police precinct, it does have that sort of layer of claustrophobia to it, and it sort of makes you sort of, and also like Danny, we're not exactly sure what is going on, because like the only thing we know about here is like he's a cannibal, but then as the episode progresses we find out that he knows how to do black magic as well, so that sort of gives the episode a bit of a supernatural feel to it as well. And I guess one of the things, I guess, with the episode, which didn't quite honestly work for me, is kind of the tone, because as we know, Stuart Gordon is a guy who does enjoy putting camp in his projects. But pretty much the combination of him and also Richard Schismar and Jonathan Scheck, my arch nemesis, because they also wrote a pretty campy episode of Masters of Horror, The Washingtonian. So the combination of these three talents together definitely it seems like a perfect fit between making a horror film that does have elements of camp. But I think the campy elements just didn't really quite work for me. But I'm not sure how you both feel about that.
Well, I think depending on what you're going into with something by Stuart Gordon, there is a campy element to it. Like Reanimator, From Beyond, even Castle Freak, there's definitely camp there, and Dreams in the Witch House definitely had that as well. And I know that he definitely makes it work because that's just something he adds naturally into his work when, you know, as a director or as a writer himself, but not obviously not for this, but I'm just saying. But it is a serious story, but I think those kind of bits sort of take away, but they just give you some breathing room for a second because you're still trying to like understand what the hell's going on. I just think at parts more than anything, they just kind of lingered on a little too long than they should have. Whereas, having a bit of camp in it wasn't something that I thought took away from it at all. Because I think that he knows how to kind of get that in the right kind of blend with everything else.
Yeah, I the campy moments for me is like when the cop is, you know, stuffing his face full of pizza and there's like pepperoni falling everywhere and his face is like this greasy, oily mess that, you know, is slowly transforming because, you know, we don't know what's happening to everybody in the police station. And then there's some moments where there's a police officer like stuffed under a desk and there's just like this horrific amount of blood everywhere. And that those moments for me, I was able to have a chuckle out of because I'm just like, the campiness wasn't necessarily in what I visually saw, but was also in what I was taking away from the story about like all these men getting their comeuppance for messing with this like female cop. And so I was like, ah, you're getting your, you will get yours. Don't you worry. You're next. And I found that funny.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I also like with Elizabeth Moss as the character of Danny, she, you can obviously tell that of course she's the outsider of this precinct, but from the very beginning, you sort of realize that what you know more about her is that she's actually a huge horror fan. So she kind of is aware of everything that is going on and makes references to everything. And even one cop gets angry at her because he makes a reference to Silence of the Lambs. And she's like, no, no, that's not it. That's a totally different character you're making reference to. And of course, another cop's not happy about that because it makes her look like a smartass. But, you know, she's a character who's knows her stuff, knows that there's something up, and you know that's what makes her a good, like a really compelling character. And of course, you know, Elizabeth Moss as an actor, you know, she brings so much to that character that just makes her very relatable, and you know, she handles like the material really well.
Yeah, she's incredibly smart, incredibly practical, and I like that everyone else is kind of just like an NPC on the side, like, oh, you're here, but you're not that important. Like, this is about her and her fight and journey through this film. And then, of course, Ida is also a really important element in all of this. But I love that, yeah, she's just such a great central character. And yeah, she's, I love the conversation that you're talking about, Bede, because one of the cops says, oh, there's nothing worse than a horror movie nerd.
I'm like, what a freak.
I was like, oh, shut up. You get out of here.
Yeah, you're just inside, you're just kind of like, fuck you, man.
Like, they gave him that line, he's going to die a horrible death.
Yeah, and I think he did.
And also, Ida himself, played by Stephen E. Hart, he's definitely got a very unique look about him that I thought sort of made him quite memorable as a villain. He doesn't say much throughout the whole episode, but he has a very creepy presence about him, and I thought he did a really good job of sort of capturing that quite well in the episode.
Yeah, I thought it was a very interesting, I guess, villain of the piece, because it's quite different from even from stuff we've seen in Masters of Horror, kind of taking this mythical type of thing with like black magic and stuff, and you know, kind of how it all works. And I found that really, really different and interesting. And I think with sort of that central character with being like a serial killer who, you know, is a cannibal, but you don't know much about it and you're trying to find out about it along with the character. So she's like your vessel in a way. So I liked that. And I think it's always interesting to see earlier performances from people who are more well-known now. Because I think my introduction to Elizabeth Moss that I could at least remember was Mad Men.
Although Elizabeth Moss as Mad Max, I would like to see.
Well, I'd watch that. but yeah, I got on, you know, if I've seen her in something before that, I honestly can't remember. But it is interesting to kind of see something, you know, that she was in earlier and that, you know, she's really good in this, but obviously her skills have just gotten better and better because she is one of the more, I think, compelling people working, even if she's a Scientologist, I think.
Oh, gosh.
Well, we won't hold that against her, but
that's been a disclaimer.
I mean, I will, but
you know. Don't be disappointed when you find out that Elizabeth Moss is a Scientologist. Aren't all rich people Scientologists, though? Anyway.
Pretty much. They got to spend the money somewhere.
But I live down the road from the Scientology Center here in Melbourne. It's only just up the road.
I don't live near any religious buildings. I guess where I live, it's not a religious place. Anyway.
But I got to say one more thing before we sort of I loved about this episode was the score. I thought the score, I guess it's been a while since I've seen this episode because I hadn't seen this since it actually aired. And I was sitting there and I'm like, I really like the score because it has that sort of mixture of sort of it's hard to describe the score because it feels very kind of something you would hear out of one of the Predator films. It's sort of like a lot of bombs, stuff like that. And it really sort of, again, I guess it kind of adds to because the character of Eater is meant to be a Cajun. So I guess that kind of adds to that sort of aspect of his personality, but also kind of adding something that's different to the episode and not some kind of generic kind of horror score that we've heard times
before. And I think it kind of added to the atmosphere too, strangely enough.
Like it adds a bit more of a creepy atmosphere. Bobby Johnston was the composer of that.
Yeah, I was just having a look at his discography. There's not anything I really recognize, but he did a really great job. And I was really fascinated by the score rather than I have a tendency to get bored of scores sometimes and will just like block that bit out of my head. So if it's forgettable, I won't remember it. So I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. But this was really interesting because they incorporated a lot of different styles of music and they had a Cajun inspired like music and instrumentals as well, along with, you know, him himself playing his maraca, which I'm assuming has some kind of conjuring power along with it, you know, music summoning demons and things like that. So it was really fascinating.
Yeah, it was a pretty, I guess overall, like, even though I've kind of sort of had mixed elements with it, but I think overall it is a pretty solid little episode. I would say it's on the level of what the two episodes that Stuart Gordon did with on Masters of Horror, but I think for what it is, I think it's still a pretty decent one nonetheless. Marcy, what are your final thoughts and rating for Eater?
I thought it was a pretty solid episode. I think it's definitely one of the one of the better ones that we've seen so far with Fear Itself. And anything Stuart Gordon, like, yeah, fantastic. I mean, I've pretty much seen, I think, everything he's directed. This was one that I hadn't. There's still, I think, the very few, if anything, left that of his I haven't seen. I've actually thought it was pretty solid. I think if things were fleshed out more, as I said earlier, you could make a feature out of this. And it does have that Stuart Gordon flavor and style, and yeah, like you said, like it does have some stuff in common with the Masters of Horror episode The Washingtonians, but I think this is a lot more successful. And whether or not it's just the script was better than that or Stuart Gordon just made it work, I don't know. I found it a pretty enjoyable episode. If not, maybe it just lagged a little bit in some places, but overall it comes together really well. The kind of twist is something you suspect, but it still kind of is shocking, especially when you start seeing the bodies, you know, start piling up. I'd give this 3.5 ripped your heart out, stolen your looks for my shape shifting out of 5.
I love it.
And what about you, Kat?
I really enjoyed this episode as my introduction to the anthology series. I really loved Reanimator, and I saw a lot of that in this film with the practical effects, the camera work, especially when we had some really cool angles of Eater himself. I saw a lot of those elements coming through in this, and obviously Stuart Gordon, the script for me was a little bit like meh. In a way, just because, like, I just wish that there was more thought put into the dialogue. You know, we're stuck in this police station. Yeah, we get it. There's sexist cops. We've got a female protagonist up against a supernatural being. I would have preferred a little bit more thoughtful dialogue just to fill in those parts where they were speaking, because there isn't a lot of talking throughout the film, and especially in the show, especially in the second half. I really liked that they referenced horror movies. They referenced Ed Gein at one point, so I was like, okay, they're throwing in true crime. Stuart Gordon and the writers, they know their stuff. I give it a 3 out of go see your dentist, please, 5. Because his teeth, Oh my god.
Yeah, that's
oh my, I'm a teeth like fanatic. So seeing his teeth, I was like, oh, I think I'm traumatized.
Yeah.
But I guess for me, I would give it about 3 out of 5 as well. Like I said, I don't think it's perfect, and I think some of the sort of the campiness of the approach I felt was a bit uneven at times. But I do agree with you, Marcy. I think Richard Schismar and my arch nemesis Jonathan Scheck's writing on this episode probably worked better here than in Washingtonians, because I think because since Washingtonians went for that camp as well, but I don't think it kind of meshed with that episode's director, Peter Maddox, style, since, you know, he's more of a serious filmmaker. And probably if Stuart Gordon directed that episode, it probably would have worked a lot better. But here, I think, it, for most part, it's still a pretty solid episode. Like I said, it's not a great episode, but it does have a pretty solid premise that you could easily expand into a longer episode or movie. Mm. And, you know, Elizabeth Moss just kicking ass and taking no names in this whole episode. And of course, I guess to make context, why is Jonathan Scheck my arch nemesis?
Yeah, I'm hanging here.
A while back, he's in a film that I consider one of the worst films of all time, Welcome to Whoop Whoop, which somehow has got a bit of a revival as a cult hit, but I don't understand why, but that's just me. So I wrote a tweet saying, like, why is everyone trying to make Welcome to Whoop Whoop into a cult classic? It's not a cult classic. And then one day I was just checking, I got a notification and I looked, it was from Jonathan Scheck himself. I didn't tag him at all in this tweet, and all he wrote was, it is.
He called you out like a movie.
He called me out.
Worst film ever.
Yes. Oh, he called me out. And of course, I backtracked and said, oh, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. But inside, I'm like, you bastard. So he's been my arch nemesis ever since, even though I do love that thing you do. So.
Stand your ground.
Yes. Exactly. Yes, so he's been my arch nemesis ever since. We'll be talking more about him in the future, because he also wrote another episode of Fear Itself that's coming up, and as well, actually has also starred in the episode as well. Yeah. So.
Okay.
But
can't escape him, can we?
Exactly. So I'll be talking about that my arch nemesis again then. But we move right along to episode 6 of Fear Itself.
6.
Which of course is the episode New Year's Day.
So I'm sorry, I just really don't like dancing.
I know, it's fine.
Eddie was telling me.
And really, what did he have to say? What would he know about relationships? Has he ever been in one? Really? Huh.
And I know that it hasn't really been that long.
No. You're not that complicated.
I love you.
I know. You do?
Look, I know I... Look, you say that I never take chances.
I'll be back.
Which was directed by Darren Lynn Bousman, the director of Saw's 2, 3, 4, Repo the Genetic Opera, and most recently Spiral, the Book of Saw. Mm-hmm. And this episode was written by Steve Niles and Ben Sokolovsky, from a screen story by Steve Niles, which in turn is also based on a short story called The Dead Time by Paul Kane. This episode stars Brianna Avigan, Zule Hinano, I probably butchered her last name, so please forgive me, Niall Matta, and Corey Monteith. And
R.I.P.
Definitely R.I.P. And this episode's plot summary, which I am reading off IMDb, is... A young woman awakens in a post-apocalyptic world overrun by zombies. Now, that's the initial setup of this episode. Mm-hmm. But, Marcy, this is your first time watching the episode.
Yes.
Tell us your thoughts on New Year's Day.
Okay. So, I thought the premise was really interesting. Like, you wake up, you open a window. Oh, okay, all shit's broken loose outside. It looks like the person has might have had, you know, a bit too much to drink. They're hungover, don't know what the hell's going on. And then slowly, you know, things start to unravel. And then it kind of, I'm sitting here going, okay, I think I know what this twist is. And this is kind of irritating me because this character is just being absolutely fucking stupid. Look, I really like Jaron Lynn Bousman. I think he's tops. And I could see like that kind of style that he sort of, you know, the same kind of style that like James Wan used in Saw that Jaron Lynn Bousman took to his Saw sequels. That kind of weird style is in this, and it reminded me of Dance of the Dead from Masters of Horror, which was the Tobe Hooper one, where it's a really interesting premise, but a lot of things kind of let it down. And while that one had so much like style that it became too much that it didn't work, I feel like this, it was so overdone, it wasn't really necessary. And when it gets to the end, like, yeah, I could tell what that twist was, and it didn't really impact me the way it should have. And the journey to get there, I just felt like could have been a lot more interesting than it was. Like, I like the idea that this character's kind of remembering, like, what happened the night before and stuff. But we as the audience, you know, when you have that one character that you follow, you're kind of meant to be in their shoes. But we already know more than she's, you know, apparently can work out. And I felt that just kind of was a bit silly, because I don't think that's how it necessarily works. Because then you're just going like, why the fuck are you doing this? This is so fucking stupid. And you can't have a character purposely make stupid decisions to go with your shocking plot twist, because it still comes off incredibly stupid. But this one was definitely a mixed bag for me. As much as I did like the premise, and I thought it did start off within the first, like, 5-10 minutes fairly decently.
Kat, what did you think of New Year's Day?
I really enjoyed this. Like Marcy was saying, we see a lot of, you know, Darren Bousman's stylistic choices of especially, like, the lights flashing, and we see, like, jagged images and blurred faces and whatnot. So I've seen, you know, we've seen that in Saw 2 and 3, you know, however many times we've watched it. But I really enjoyed the twist, because I am slow usually to pick up twists. And that's just because if something doesn't have subtitles, I have a really hard time of, like, concentrating. And so this didn't have subtitles, and I was like, no, like, I'm not going to understand what's happening. And so at one point I was like, isn't she with this roommate guy? And
that confused me as well. I was like, aren't they together? I was like, does she have a boyfriend? Does she not have a boyfriend? Who's this fucking guy? Is that her roommate?
Who's the child?
Yeah,
who does the child belong to?
That was so confusing. It wasn't just you. I was there going,
okay, good.
Fuck.
It's like, where am I? But then it was like at the halfway mark, like they let all that go. And I was like, okay, cool. So I don't have to worry about that really convoluted piece of exposition that wasn't provided for me.
It made no sense.
I was like, I don't know, what is this woman dating both of them? I don't know what's going on. I'm not one to judge, and I don't, but can you tell me? But I really loved the twist scene where I was like, oh my god, it all makes sense now. So like when it got to the end, like every one of her decisions, I was like,
yeah,
how did I not pick that up earlier? I really enjoyed it, and I do like Bousman's style of directing. And for me, I always enjoy like a narrative heavy. And so for me, that fell a little bit short on that side, but yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I guess for me, I think out of all the episodes of Fear Itself, cause this is my second time watching the episode. And funnily enough, this is not the episode I'm thinking of. Cause I was thinking of like whether this was the last episode that actually aired on TV before it was cancelled. Now that's another two episodes for now, but we'll get to that later. But for me, I guess for New Year's Day, what I think is the most interesting out of all the episodes of Fear Itself, and this is something I believe you and I have talked about, Marcy, how compared to Masters of Horror, the episodes kind of definitely feel more TV show-esque rather than more cinematic. But with New Year's Day, I could just safely say without a doubt, like, you could watch this episode and be like, oh, Darren Lynn Bousman directed this episode.
Oh, yeah, like, without a doubt, you can tell.
Like, he's...
It's him, yeah.
Yeah, like, because he's worked with, you know, low budgets and stuff like that. So, and you can instantly tell within the first minute of this episode, like, the same style he's brought to all the Saw films, Reaper, the Genetic Opera, you know, all the type of films he was making at that time is in this episode. And he definitely goes much more full tilt with the style in this one. So this, for me, I guess, is an episode where it definitely is more about the style than the substance. And, you know, because the premise itself is a pretty simple one. Girl wakes up, the zombie outbreak happens, so she goes across town to try to meet up with her boyfriend. And, like, and the episode really does delve into that style. And now that I sort of was thinking about it, I think the style definitely is like more reflective of the mindset of what our main character is
going through. I feel like that's what it represents, but I feel like it was just too overused, where I think that style works better when you're not doing it like every 2 seconds. And that was the same kind of issue I had with Dance of the Dead, where it was just relying on this particular like style. And the way it was shot, like, very similar, like, way too much. And there were points in this, and I think it was particularly when she was in the lift or the elevator. I don't have seizures, but I felt like I was going to have a seizure induced from those visuals, because it's just so blah, blah, blah. So, you know, if anybody who hasn't seen it or is going to rewatch it, just be warned that that could trigger off something if you do have those issues. Because it is very light, blah, blah, blah. But this one also has kind of like more darker themes to do with, you know, death, grief, suicide. So also, you know, a bit of a warning there. But we, you know, kind of always have to have like some kind of warnings with these these ones, because, you know, a few episodes we've covered have been very, very serious.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In their themes. But yeah, anyway, I'm rambling.
But yeah, I was going to also say, like, I was going to agree with you, like, even though I think that as appropriate as that style is for putting us in the mindset of Brianna Avigan's character, it does get a little too much at times, which I do agree with. And but sort of the answer to your point, what you were saying before, like, why is she making so many dumb decisions? Well, spoilers, she's dead, so her brain's not working at all.
During
this part, I loved that. I was like, oh, I'm dumb. It all makes sense.
That's the thing, though, because because the first time I watched this episode, it never occurred to me, like, oh, she might actually have been dead the entire time. Like, when she wakes up at the beginning, it's like her turning into a zombie. But since we're seeing this from her point of view, she thinks she's still alive.
That's the bit I found really interesting, that in her head, she's having all these conversations and she's venting her grievances and she's grieving losing friends throughout this whole process. And it's so fascinating, because it's like, do zombies actually have, like, would they have that? Like, the last memories of their brain before they lose, you know, all consciousness and just, you know, become the undead. And so I was like, oh, that's so fascinating that she was still able to make these decisions in the last few hours of that day. It was, I thought it was really cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think also as well, like, you know, since we are seeing this from her point of view, like, all the decisions that she makes, of course, being that she's a zombie, her brain's no longer working, so every kind of bad decision she makes in this episode, like, what I do think is interesting, like, of the episode, and this is why, for, like, the first time I watched this episode, it took me a while to figure out, what the twist is. I just assumed, like, and this is probably a deliberate part, that all the decisions that she makes would be a mixture of panic and being overwhelmed by what's going on. But since she's just woken up after a massive night out, you could also contribute that to either her being still being drunk or hangover. So, like,
incredibly hungover.
But then watching this episode again, now knowing how the episode, like, the twist is, like, I can see, like, ah, oh, that would, like none of the zombies never really interact with her, or at least they don't attack her or anything like that. And also, like, when she does run into human characters, they kind of tend a bit more standoffish or freak out over her and stuff like that as well.
What clued me in pretty quickly is that she wasn't being attacked by zombies, and she's talking to the zombies as if they weren't zombies. And I'm like, oh, she's dead. She's a zombie. But what I think actually is really interesting with the script is, like, what you touched on before, is that it's from her point of view, but then it kind of makes you wonder if, like, that zombie brain still, like, as your consciousness still thinks you're normal, but the way it's like I don't want to say normal because it's not the right word, but I think you know what I mean, where you sort of feel like, you know, okay, this is me, da 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 da, but then it's like these involuntary actions start to happen, and then that view of how you seeing reality starts to change. And I think that's kind of something that was interesting, you know, to think about with the concept of this. While I obviously had some issues with it, I still think it's a pretty solid overall film with a really interesting idea. And I felt that, the performances were actually pretty solid. The housemate dude, I was like, why the fuck are you dressed like Constantine? That was just weirding out the whole time.
But no, he was like kind of wearing a jacket that looked very similar to Constantine.
He kind of had that gruffy look as well.
But I also think, because I've seen pictures of Darren Lynn Bousman, and the guy, the roommate, looked exactly like Darren Lynn Bousman. It was freaking me out a little bit.
Yeah. I was just like, is that him? And I was like Googling, and I'm like, okay, no, they just look really creepily alike. Indeed. Also, fun fact, Breonna Evigan was in one of my favorite teenage movies, Step Up to the Streets.
The best part of the Step Up series. You got to step up to the streets.
I just really like dance movies. It's my secret shame.
And episode when it was released around the time when she was big because of those movies. So, you explain that. And of course, she would work with Darren Lynn Bousman again later on as well, because Darren Lynn Bousman is one of those filmmakers who likes to work with the same actors over and over again. But I also found it interesting, like the late, great Corey Monteith being in this episode. And this was he did before being on Glee as well.
Oh, really? So,
he looked so young.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Really young.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because I can't remember when Glee came to television, but
I think it came out a year after the.
I think it was a year after.
Yeah, because this came out in 2008. Well, the series and Glee came out in 2009.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Right,
But that's one of the interesting things about going through Fear Itself so far is, like, compared to Masters of Horror, which, you know, has a lot of the same actors you see in a lot of horror films and that, but Fear Itself, which is particularly interesting, is that there's a lot of actors who appear throughout all these episodes that would go started out in these episodes and would go on to have huge careers later on.
That's so insane.
Oh, yeah. And I also think it's interesting that this episode was written by the writer who created the comic book series 30 Days of Night as well. So I think that's...
I didn't realize that, actually.
Yeah, Steve Niles, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and Ben Sokolowski did Arrow. He worked on Arrow, which I thought was really cool. I loved the Arrow first couple of seasons, so...
I also think another thing I really like about, because like I said, like, this is definitely a Darren Lynn Bousman episode through and through, but one of the things I really like in terms of what he brings with his style and direction is when he does go to the flashbacks, when we go to the New Year's Eve party, like, the transitions were really cool.
That was really good,
Like, Breonna Evigan's character, I believe her character's name is Helen. Like, she'd be at the car park, and then all of a sudden the camera would zoom back, and then you would see, like, cups and everything, like, in the foreground.
Yeah.
And then we just, camera moves around, and then we're at the party. And all those, and again, those are, like, something out of the Saw films as well, in terms of those transition shots.
Yeah. And especially because when he does transition from those, the present to the past, we see that real difference in depth and intensity of colors and vibrancy. So you're like, okay, this is definitely a flashback because the present is really dull and what the hell's going on? And I really liked that. Because he does do that in Saw as well, when we see their different interactions with people in their past that got them, you know, to where they are.
And I got to say, there's one, like, watching this episode again, I picked up a massive plot hole. Where did the roommate come from when she actually went over to her boyfriend and her boyfriend's house?
it's not her boyfriend.
The whole time.
Sorry?
He stalks her the whole night, but Monteith isn't her boyfriend. She's just in love with him.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, good.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. But, yeah, she goes over to the house, goes through the door. Yeah, because then she sees her friend who's sleeping with the boy she's in love with.
I feel like they must have dated or were dating very briefly.
Yeah.
Just wasn't that into her. And he started banging the friend behind her back.
Yeah.
And she was oblivious to it. That's what I think was going on. And the housemate was really in love with her, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think he was following her the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was following her the entire time because, you know, he probably was going through the same type of thing himself and still being in love with her. Hence, like, at the very end, they hold hands and chow down on Cory Monteith and their other friend. But the plot hole I have is, so Helen comes in through the door, sees Cory Monteith and Zula Heno, who plays Christy, and then all of a sudden, like, her roommate is in the kitchen. He grabs Cory Monteith, and I'm like, where did he come from?
How did you get in the house? Did someone leave a door open?
Well, maybe they were too distracted by Helen that they didn't see him come in.
But that's what I'd assume.
I don't know.
I guess, but the geography, because the kitchen is not anywhere near the front door. You have to go through the front door and walk in.
Maybe he crawled in, Bede. Maybe he crawled in.
Crawled in under the camera.
Yeah.
Well, I was the same, like, with that kid who introduced earlier and then comes back as a zombie. It's like, and then he's in the house, but the dude shut the door behind him.
Who does the kid belong to?
These are all questions.
Maybe it's that lady across the road who was a zombie.
Oh, that is true. Yeah, that could be a good point. I don't know.
I
don't know. Because I know that the housemate says, I can hear your mum calling you. Have a good night.
Oh, so she'd have to be, like, at least on the same floor as Helen.
Okay. The kid was unnecessary.
Yeah, it was like you could have taken the kid out and it would not have affected.
No, I would not even notice.
But, yeah, I guess we could wrap up this our talk on New Year's Day. Marcy, tell us your final thoughts and rating for this episode.
Yeah, this is definitely a case of overly stylized substance. I think it just went a little too over the top with that. And for me, that was quite distracting. I think there's a very solid and intriguing premise. That makes for, you know, an interesting watch, but, you know, at least for me, it was quite predictable with where it was going. But I give this 2.5 zombie boyfriends out of 5.
And what about you, Kat?
I agree with Marcy on the over-stylized, only because, like, I'm really light sensitive, and so that was a little bit annoying for me because I couldn't concentrate on any dialogue, and I was like, ugh. But, yeah, I loved the premise. I loved the whole concept of her retaining some kind of her humanity while she's on this journey to find the love of her life in this zombie apocalypse. But, yeah, I give this a 3.
Yeah, I would...
zombie revenge. Just out of 5.
I give this one 3 out of 5 step ups to the streets. Zombie step ups to the streets.
See, where's that movie music?
Where is that movie?
See, I want to see a zombie dance film now.
Oh my god, let's make one.
Let's do this. I give it about 3 out of 5. Like I said, this is definitely an episode where it is more style over substance, overly styled, as we have already stated before. But I do think it has a lot of merit, and I think out of all the episodes of Fear Itself, at least from what I remember, and as well as, you know, going through this retrospective up to this point, this is definitely the one where you can honestly can say that this is definitely was made by the filmmaker who's directing it.
Like, yeah.
His style and his trademarks to shine through. I would say this and also the Ronnie Yu episode that we talked about on the previous episode, our family member, are definitely the best indicators of that. And also I thought Brianna Avigan, like, even though, yeah, Helen does make some pretty dumb decisions, but, you know, there's a logical explanation why that is. But I thought she still did a pretty good job. And, you know, she goes through a lot in this episode. And I felt like the episode did a pretty interesting job in which kind of doing something different with the zombie genre, kind of making
it
a point of view of somebody who's turning into a zombie as this whole thing is happening.
I definitely enjoyed that aspect.
And I think it's a pretty decent episode. So, yeah, 3 out of 5.
Actually, one thing I will add, I thought, you know, because we could tell, you know, the budget was a lot less than Masters of Horror was, but this episode actually didn't look too low budgety compared to a couple of the other episodes. So I thought that actually worked in its favor as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think because Darren Lynn Bousman, having, you know, done the Saw films, which
were
also budget films, he knows, like, how to make something very cinematic out of something that's very low budget. So.
Yeah.
That would make him sort of like the kind of the right filmmaker for an episode like this as well. But yes, well, I guess that could be a wrap on this episode of Podcasters of Horror. Thank you, Marcy, as being a great co-host as always.
You're welcome.
And also thank you, Kat, for coming on this episode and talking about these two episodes from the show with us. And hopefully, based on these two episodes, it'll make you interested to check out more of this series.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm going to probably chuck on an episode before I go to bed, because horror is comfort, so I'll just watch that before bed.
We would say, Marcy and I would say, watch the episode Spooked, which is directed by Brad Anderson, mainly because it stars Eric Roberts, and we love Eric Roberts.
Love
him. And then the one after that as well, Family Man, wasn't it?
By Ronnie Yu. So. But also do check out other episodes of Masters of Horror, because there's a lot of great ones there too. So, Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
Yes, as always, because we are the Super Network and we have many podcasts and stuff under our banner, our base of operations is supermarcy.com. And you can always keep up to date with us on your preferred social media platform of choice. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/thesupernetwork. You can join the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/thesupernetworkgroup. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/SM_supernetwork. We are on Instagram, the.super.network, and on TikTok at the Super Network. And you can find us on YouTube with all sorts of bonus stuff. Just look up the Super Network YouTube channel, or Super Marcy or Bede. You'll find the channel there. And you can follow me on Twitter under my personal account at twitter.com/supermarcy. And you can find me on Letterboxd at super_Marcy. And you can see all the stuff that I check out. And, of course, when I watch episodes of Fear Itself, I log them on there. And I have my rankings list of all the Masters of Horror episodes, which I'll probably do the same for this one when we finish it.
Awesome. And if people want to find me personally, they can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BeJamine. Or my personal writers page on Facebook at facebook.com/terribleaussie. And of course, you can find all my writings over at supermarcy.com with my reviews and comms. And also, definitely go check out my Twitter, because at the time that this episode drops, I'll already be neck deep into my 31 days of horror. So you'll be able to see all my Twitter reviews and reactions to all the films I've been watching so far in October. And Kat, where can people find you on the internet this week?
I shitpost on Twitter at twitter.com/catstead_. And that's basically the only platform I ever use.
But where can people find your awesome podcast?
Yeah, so you can find the podcast on Twitter at TGIF_. All our updates, news and whatnot come through there. Or you can find, well, I have an Instagram. It's Cat TGIF, and I also post episode information and horror related stuff on there as well.
Awesome. And yep, that'll be that's a wrap on this episode of Podcasters of Horror.
Yes.
Keep a lookout next month for our next episode, in which I will do an episode on the next two episodes of Fear Itself, which of course are Community and Skin and Bones. However, though, just a bit of a precursor, we also have a special bonus episode of Podcasters coming up as well that Marcy and I are working on. We won't say what that episode's about, but let's just say we're going to be talking about a couple of episodes from a very underrated but still classic 80s horror anthology TV show. No, it's not Tales from the Crypt. That's the other, but it's something else. So, right, Marcy.
Yes. Don't give it away now, Bede.
I'm not going to give it away, but I'm dish. yep, thank you to all our listeners for listening to this episode of the podcast, and we'll see you all later. See you, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. And now back to the show. The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. And now back to the show.